Welcome, my dearest listeners, to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, and I'm your host, the Tale Teller, where we take your nightmares, add a dash of Victorian intrigue, and stir it all up with a magnifying glass. Oh yeah, I'm here to weave another spine-tingling tale just for you. Now, Sherlock Holmes, the man who wants to juice an entire man's life story from his shoelaces alone, is now dodging zombies in the Victorian apocalypse. This is the finale of this particular series, but there will be more stories to come. Yes, friends, logic is about to meet the undead. And spoiler alert, zombies don't care how brilliant you are if they can eat your face. Tonight's episode, The Shadows of the Dead, follows our dynamic duo Holmes and Watson as they try to solve mysteries in the fortified town surrounded by horrors. There's fog, there's drama, there's questionable use of lantern oil, and if you thought Watson was done dealing with bullet wounds, just wait until you see him grapple with claw marks and existential dread. So, settle in with your strongest tea, or something a little stiffer, and prepare for a story filled with twists, turns, and a kind of eerie tension that'll have you double-checking your locks. Let's unravel the shadows of the dead together. Elementary? Not this time. Enjoy, legends. The morning following the encounter with the infected creature dawned heavy with tension. Holmes stood in the square, his sharp eyes watching the townsfolk as they moved about their tasks. Whispers rippled through the air, their words quiet but unmistakable. A ripple of unease had passed over Kingsbridge, and though the people had tried to maintain their veneer of normalcy, Holmes knew better. The creature they had encountered, once human, now transformed, had been left in the open for all to see. Its glowing eyes were dark now, its body unnervingly intact, despite the fatal shot Watson had delivered. The sight served as a grim warning, but Holmes' deductions had already moved beyond it. This was not an isolated event, it was a symptom of something larger. He crouched by the body, his gloved hands carefully examining its surface. The transformation, he noted, was not the slow, shambling decay of the undead, but something more deliberate. The skin was mottled with dark, branching veins, radiating outward from a point near the neck. The eyes, even in death, retained a faint shimmer of the strange luminescence. Watson approached from behind, his face a mask of concern. He spoke quietly, mentioning how the people had begun to avoid the square entirely, their fear a tangible weight. Holmes noted his word with a sharp nod, though his attention remained on the body. The infection, Holmes realized, was spreading in ways the townsfolk could not see. The barn had been its staging ground, but its reach extended far beyond. He rose abruptly, his coat swirling behind him as he turned toward Watson. Without a word, he gestured for the doctor to follow. Holmes's destination was the infirmary, a modest room in the parish church that served as the town's medical hub. The air inside was thick with the smell of herbs and antiseptics, a futile attempt to mask the ever-present stench of sickness and decay. Clara Miller was there, her hands trembling as she sorted through a basket of linens. Her face was pale, her eyes red-rimmed from sleepless nights. Watson moved to her side, offering soft words of comfort as Holmes surveyed the room. It was small and utilitarian, with shelves lined with jars of dried herbs and stacks of bandages. But it was not the space itself that interested Holmes. It was the people who came and went, their faces etched with worry. He spoke to Watson in low tones, his words clipped and deliberate. He instructed him to observe, to note any unusual symptoms or patterns amongst the townsfolk. Watson, accustomed to Holmes's peculiar methods, did not question him. Holmes moved to the far side of the room, his gaze falling on a chalkboard that listed the infirmary's records, minor injuries, illness, births, and deaths. His eyes scanned the list, searching for anomalies. A pattern began to emerge, subtle but undeniable. Certain names appeared more frequently than others, clustered around dates that coincided with known outbreaks of infection. The Millers, the blacksmith's apprentice, a farmer from the outskirts of town, all had reported minor injuries or illnesses in the weeks before the infection began to surface. Holmes turned to Watson, his voice cutting through the low murmur of the room. His deductions were swift and precise. The infection had been present in Kingsbridge for weeks, perhaps months, spreading slowly and silently. The barn was not its origin, but a marker of its progress. Watson's expression darkened as the weight of Holmes' conclusions settled over him. If the infection was already within the town, then no one was truly safe. That night, Holmes returned to the eastern wall, his mind ablaze with questions. The soil samples he had examined in his quarters confirmed what he had suspected. The infection travelled through the earth, tainting it with its strange parasitic properties. He crouched near the base of the wall, his lantern casting long shadows across the ground. The soil here was darker than elsewhere, its texture unnaturally loose. He dug his fingers into it, pulling up a handful and holding it to the light. The faint, viscous sheen the infection glinted in the lantern's glow. A faint noise behind him caught his attention, and he turned sharply. A figure emerged from the shadows, its movement slow and hesitant. For a moment, Holmes tensed, but as the figure stepped into the light, he saw that it was no creature. It was Clara Miller. She looked at him with wide, frightened eyes, clutching a bundle of rags to her chest. She spoke in hushed tones, her words trembling as she explained why she had come. She had been sorting Henry's belongings, she said, when she found something she could not explain. From the bundle, she produced a small jar, its glass smeared with dirt. Inside was a dark substance, viscous and faintly glowing. Holmes took it from her carefully, his keen eyes narrowing as he examined it. The substance was unmistakable. It was the same infection he had seen in the soil and on Henry's skin. Clara begged him for answers, her voice cracking with desperation. Holmes did not answer immediately, his mind racing as he pieced together the fragments of the puzzle. Henry had known about the infection. He had been keeping it hidden. But why? He turned to Clara, his tone measured but firm. The infection was far more dangerous than anyone had realized, he told her, and its origins needed to be uncovered. Kingsbridge's survival depended on it. Clara nodded, though the fear in her eyes remained. Holmes rose, the jar held tightly in his hand, and gestured for her to return to the safety of her home. As she disappeared into the darkness, Holmes stood alone by the wall, his thoughts heavy. The infection was not a force of nature, nor a random mutation. It was deliberate. Someone or something had brought it to Kingsbridge, and Holmes intended to find out who, or rather, what. The morning broke over Kingsbridge with the dull light of sun too weak to pierce the ever-present haze. Holmes awoke with a start, his mind already leaping from the dreamless void of sleep to the task at hand. His hands moved instinctively, organizing the clutter of his desk with sharp, precise movements. The jar Clara Miller had given him sat at the center of the table, its dark contents an unspoken challenge. The infection was deliberate. That singular thought anchored him as he worked. The jar's vicious substance pulsed faintly in the dim light, its glowing and unsettling reminder of the transformation it had wrought on Henry Miller and the creature they'd encountered. But the jar alone was not enough. It was a fragment, a clue, but not the whole truth. Watson's arrival interrupted his train of thought. The doctor, ever punctual despite the chaos of their new world, carried with him the weight of the town's anxieties. He spoke of Clara, of the townsfolk's whispers, and of the unease spreading like a shadow over Kingsbridge. Holmes nodded curtly, his attention half-focused as Watson placed a tray of meager rations on the desk. Holmes's thoughts were sharper than ever, though. Clara's discovery of the jar meant Henry Miller had been aware of the infection before his disappearance. Why would he keep such a dangerous thing hidden? What had he intended to do with it? Holmes needed answers, and he suspected they lay buried deeper than anyone in Kingsbridge dared to look. Holmes spent the better part of the morning retracing his steps to the eastern wall, this time armed with tools scavenged from Watson's medical supplies and the blacksmith's forge. He carried a small satchel filled with vials, tweezers, and a collapsible spade. The infected soil beneath the wall needed closer study, and Holmes suspected it would yield more than the faint sheen of the parasitic substance he'd seen before. The wall loomed above him, its haphazard construction a patchwork of stone and metal. The ground at its base was disturbed, the soil dark and loose, as though something had recently moved through it. Holmes knelt, his gloved hands working with mechanical precision as he dug into the earth. At first, the soil yielded only the faint viscous sheen he expected, but as he dug deeper, his spade struck something harder, an object buried beneath the surface. Holmes brushed away the dirt with care, revealing the jagged edge of a broken jar. Its glass was coated in the same glowing substance Clara had brought him. He held the shard to the light, examining the residue clinging to its surface. The glass was thicker than standard jars, suggesting it was designed for containment, not casual use. Holmes's mind raced. This jar was not part of Clara's belongings. It had been deliberately buried here, hidden near the wall. A sound behind him broke his concentration. He turned sharply, his hand instinctively moving to the knife at his belt. A figure emerged from the shadows of a nearby watchtower. One of the guards, a young man named Elias. Elias approached cautiously, his face pale and uncertain. He asked what Holmes was doing here, his voice trembling slightly. Holmes noted the tension in the guard's posture, the way his hand hovered near the crossbow slung across his back. Elias wasn't here out of curiosity. He was watching. Holmes responded with his usual sharp wit, deflecting the guard's questions with clipped explanations of scientific study and the need for precision. Elias seemed unconvinced, but eventually retreated, his steps slow and deliberate as he disappeared back toward the tower. Holmes frowned. The guard's presence was not a coincidence. Someone in Kingsbridge was aware of the infection's spread and was monitoring his investigation. Holmes returned to their quarters as the afternoon waned, his mind ablaze with new theories. Watson greeted him with concern, noting the dark circles under his eyes and the weariness in his steps. Holmes brushed aside his companion's worries, spreading the contents of his satchel across the desk. He explained his findings, detailing the broken jar and the residue it contained. The infection's presence near the wall, coupled with Clara's discovery, painted a grim picture. Someone within Kingsbridge had brought the infection here, had buried it beneath the walls, and had allowed it to spread. Watson's reaction was a mixture of disbelief and anger. The idea of betrayal within the town's walls was almost too much to bear. Holmes, however, was unrelenting. He reminded Watson of the infection's deliberate nature, of the barn's purpose, and the growing signs that Kingsbridge was no sanctuary. Holmes's mind began piecing together one by one the puzzle. The infection spread through the soil suggested an intentional design, a method of infiltration that was both subtle and effective. The jars, containment vessels, Holmes surmised, had been placed strategically, their contents allowed to seep into the earth over time. But why? What purpose could such a slow, deliberate method serve? Holmes knew the answer lay not in the infection itself, but in the people of Kingsbridge. The following morning, Holmes set out to test his hypothesis. He and Watson moved through the town with purpose, their eyes scanning every corner. Holmes paid close attention to the townsfolk, noting their movements, their expressions, and their interactions. He observed the miller, whose hands trembled as he handed out rationed flour. He watched the blacksmith, whose forge burned lower than usual, her gaze darting towards the eastern wall. He studied Clara Miller, who avoided the square entirely, her shoulders hunched as though bearing an invisible weight. Each detail built upon the last, forming a web of connections. Holmes saw patterns in the seemingly mundane, the placement of barrels near the gate, the timing of patrol shifts, the subtle avoidance of certain areas. The infection had not simply arrived in Kingsbridge. It had been planted, nurtured, and allowed to grow. And by evening, Holmes was ready to confront the truth. He and Watson returned to the infirmary, where Clara Miller was tending to a young boy with a minor burn. Holmes's abrupt arrival startled her, and she froze, as she placed the broken jar on the table before her. Holmes's voice was sharp and precise as he explained his findings. He spoke of the infected soil, the buried jars, and the spreading contamination. He accused Clara not of malice but of knowledge, of understanding the infection's presence long before her husband's disappearance. Clara's reaction was immediate. She denied everything, her voice trembling with fear and indignation. But Holmes saw through the facade. He pressed her, his words cutting through her protest with relentless logic. Finally, she broke. Her confession was halting, her words spilling out in fragments. She spoke of Henry's discovery of the infections weeks ago, of his attempts to hide it, and of his growing obsession with its purpose. She admitted to helping him bury the jars near the wall, though she claimed she had not understood their significance. Holmes listened in silence, his expression unreadable. When Clara finished, she slumped into a chair, her face buried in her hands. Watson, never the caretaker, moved to comfort her, but Holmes remained distant. The infection, he realized, was not just a threat to Kingsbridge. It was a weapon, and someone within the town had unleashed it. The question that remained, as always, was why? But he was getting closer. Holmes turned to Watson, his voice cold and deliberate. They needed to act quickly. The infection was spreading, and its creators would not remain hidden for long. As the light from the infirmary's lone lantern flickered, Holmes felt the weight of the puzzle settle over him. Kingsbridge was not a sanctuary, it was a battlefield, and the war had only just begun. The revelations of Clara's confession hung over Kingsbridge like a gathering storm. The town, already trembling under the weight of unease, now felt poised to crack. Holmes, however, moved through its streets with the same deliberate precision he applied to all things. Fear, panic, and the petty grievances of the townsfolk were inconsequential to him. They were noise obscuring the signal that he sought. Clara's words had filled several gaps in his deductions, but Holmes knew the picture was still incomplete. The infection's deliberate spread, the jars buried near the wall, and Henry Miller's obsession with them all pointed to a disturbing truth, that their purpose was conquest, destruction, or something darker in ambition. Holmes returned to the eastern wall before dawn, his lantern casting faint flickers of light across the disturbed earth. The broken jar he had uncovered days earlier was only one piece of the infection's network. The soil, still blackened and faintly viscous, pulsed beneath his fingers as if alive. Now it seemed that the infection was not spreading at random. It moved with intent, seeking pathways towards the heart of Kingsbridge. Watson joined him soon after, his boots crunching softly on the frozen dirt. He had spent the night at the infirmary tending to Clara, who had succumbed to a fever. Holmes glanced at him briefly, noting the fatigue in his step and the tightening of his jaw. The doctor's compassion, though admirable, was also a weakness. Watson spoke softly, recounting Clara's ramblings in the hours before her fever worsened. She had mentioned Henry's late-night excursion to the barn, his hushed conversation with a stranger in the shadows. Watson suspected that these details might help unravel the mystery, but Holmes already knew their significance. Henry's contact, whoever they were, was the missing link in the infection spread. Holmes rose from his crouch, his sharp gaze cutting through the dim light. He instructed Watson to gather the names of everyone who had been in contact with Henry in the weeks before his disappearance. The infection was not the work of a single person. It had spread too far too quickly. A conspiracy was unfolding, and Holmes intended to dismantle it piece by piece. By midday, Watson had compiled a list of names. It was short, but every entry carried weight. The blacksmith, whose forge supplied tools for the town's defences, the miller, who rationed grain and flour with a suspiciously tight hand, the gate guards, who controlled all movements in and out of Kingsbridge. Holmes examined the list with a critical eye. Each name represented a thread in the web of deceit surrounding the infection. The blacksmith's connection to the buried jars intrigued him most. Tools have been used to seal the glass, to etch faint symbols along their rims. These markings, Holmes suspected, were not decorative but functional, sigils intended to contain the infection spread until the jars were broken. He decided to begin with the blacksmith. The forge was a small, soot-blackened structure near the town square. Its heat was oppressive, the air thick with the metallic tang of molten iron. The blacksmith, a wiry woman named Edith, greeted Holmes with a wary glance. Her hands, calloused and scarred, were wrapped tightly around a hammer. She did not like being interrupted. Holmes observed her carefully, noting the tension in her posture, the faint sheen of sweat on her brow despite the cold. He spoke in his usual clipped tones, his questions sharp and unyielding. He asked about the jars, their construction, and the tools used to seal them. Edith's answers were curt, her tone defensive, and she denied any knowledge of such things, claiming her work was limited to weapons and farming implements. Holmes pressed further, his voice lowering to a dangerous calm. He described the sigils etched into the jars, their intricate patterns that spoke of more than mere craftsmanship. He mentioned the infected soil near the wall, the slow, deliberate spread of the contamination. Edith's mask began to crack. Her hammer clanged against the anvil as she lowered it, her shoulders sagging. She admitted, in halting words, that she had been approached weeks ago by a stranger, an outsider who'd passed through Kingsbridge briefly. The man had brought her strange requests, jars to be sealed with iron bands, their edges engraved with symbols she did not understand. He had paid her in gold, more than enough to quiet her suspicions. Holmes asked about the man, his appearance, his demeanor. Edith described him as tall and thin, with a face half hidden by a hood. His voice had been soft but commanding, his presence unsettling. He had spoken of great purpose, though he had shared little of his intent. Holmes filed the description away, his mind turning over the possibilities. The outsider's presence was significant, but it did not explain why the jars had been left behind. Had the infection been abandoned, or was it spread as part of a larger plan? The next thread led Holmes and Watson to the miller. The miller's cottage stood at the edge of the square, its shutters drawn tightly against the cold. Inside, the air was thick with the scent of flour and damp wood. The miller himself was a broad-shouldered man with a ruddy complexion and eyes that darted nervously as Holmes entered. Holmes's approach was more calculated this time. He spoke of Henry Miller's disappearance, of Clara's fevered words, and of the infection spread through the town. The miller bristled at the accusations, his voice rising in protest. Holmes silenced him with a single pointed question. Why had Henry been seen leaving the mill late at night, his hands dusted with flour? The miller froze, his protest faltering. He admitted, reluctantly, that Henry had come to him weeks before his disappearance, asking for help storing a collection of jars. The miller had agreed, though he had not asked questions. The jars had been heavy, their contents sloshing faintly as they were carried. Holmes pressed further, asking where the jars had been stored. The miller hesitated, his face pale, before finally confessing. The jars had been buried near the barn, their placement deliberate. Holmes and Watson left the cottage in silence, the weight of the miller's confession heavy between them. The puzzle was beginning to take shape. The infection had been seeded in Kingsbridge, not as an accident, but as a strategy. The jars were not simply containers, they were weapons. As night fell, Holmes sat in his quarters, the map of Kingsbridge spread before him. He began to mark locations of the jars, the routes taken by Henry and the outsider, the points of infection. A pattern emerged, its center unmistakable. The infection spread was not random. It was converging on a single point, the heart of Kingsbridge. Holmes leaned back in his chair, his expression grim. The infection was not the end game, it was the beginning. And someone somewhere was watching it unfold. Watson entered the room, his rifle slung over his shoulder, and he asked Holmes what he'd discovered, his tone a mix of curiosity and dread. Holmes did not answer immediately. Instead, he rose, his movements deliberate. The time for observation had ended, he felt. The time for action had indeed begun. He spoke calmly, but his words carried the weight of certainty. The infection had been unleashed with intent, and Kingsbridge was its testing ground. They would find its source, or they would perish with the town. The shadows of Kingsbridge were growing deeper, and Holmes intended to illuminate them. The air within Kingsbridge was heavy, not with the usual dread of the undead, but the weight of something far more insidious. Holmes had spent the night in silence, his sharp eyes fixed on the map laid before him. The infection's pattern was unmistakable. Its convergence on the town square, the very center of Kingsbridge, was something that Holmes was 100% certain on. Watson stood by the window, his rifle in hand, watching the pale morning light creep over the stone walls. The doctor had grown more somber with each revelation, his usual optimism dimmed by the realization that their refuge was a carefully constructed lie. Holmes spoke without turning, his tone clipped and urgent. The infection had been orchestrated to spread through Kingsbridge. But its purpose was not destruction, it was control. Holmes gestured to the map, pointing to the square where the town's well was located. It was the only source of water for Kingsbridge, and it explained the infection's design. The soil contamination, the jars buried near the wall, and the creature they had encountered were all connected to this central point. Watson voiced the question lingering in both their minds. Who was behind it? Holmes offered no answer. Instead, he rose abruptly, his coat sweeping behind him as he made for the door. The answers lay in the square, beneath the surface, and he intended to find them. Watson followed behind him, his steps heavy but resolute. The square was eerily quiet as they arrived, the usual hum of activity replaced by an unnatural stillness. The well stood at its center, a weathered stone structure that had been the lifeblood of Kingsbridge for generations. Around it, the townsfolk gathered, their faces pale and drawn. Word had spread of Holmes' investigation, and fear clung to them like a shadow. Holmes ignored their murmurs, his focus locked on the well. He approached it with the precision of a surgeon, his sharp eyes observing every tiny detail. The stones were darkened with age, but faint streaks of black ichor clung to the surface, nearly invisible to the dim light. The infection was here. Watson spoke to the crowd, his voice steady despite the tension in the air. He explained the danger the town faced, the spread of the infection, and the need to act quickly. The townsfolk muttered amongst themselves, their fear mixed with suspicion. Holmes interrupted, his voice cutting through the noise like a blade. He declared that the infection was not natural. It had been brought here deliberately. And he accused the town of harboring a saboteur, someone who had used Kingsbridge as a testing ground for their experiments. The crowd erupted, their voices rising in a cacophony of denial and accusation. Holmes remained unmoved, his sharp gaze scanning the faces before him. His deductions were clear. The infection required knowledge, resources, and proximity. The saboteur was not an outsider. They were one of Kingsbridge's own. His eyes settled on the miller. The man's face was pale, his hands trembling as he tried to edge away from the crowd. Holmes's voice rang out, naming him as the link between the jars and the well. The miller stammered, his protest weak and unconvincing. Before Holmes could press further, the sound of shattering stone echoed through the square. The ground beneath the well trembled, and the air filled with a low, resonant hum. The infection had been activated. The well erupted in a torrent of black ichor, its viscous substance spilling out and pooling across the cobblestones. The crowd scattered, their screams filling the air as the ichor began to move, flowing like a living thing, seeking out the cracks in the earth and the frightened souls around it. Holmes and Watson stood their ground, their eyes fixed on the well. From its depths emerged a figure, tall and grotesque, its form twisted by the infection. Its skin was blackened and glistening, its eyes glowing with an unnatural light. It was not human, but it bore the faint echoes of humanity. A terrible fusion of flesh and parasite. The miller fell to his knees, his voice rising in a wail of despair. He confessed to his role, his voice trembling as he spoke of the stranger who had come to Kingsbridge, offering gold and promises of protection. The jars, the infection, the deliberate spread, it had all been part of a plan to turn Kingsbridge into a breeding ground for the parasite's evolution. Holmes stepped forward, his knife glinting in the light. He spoke calmly, his voice cutting through the chaos. The infection could not be reasoned with, but it could be destroyed. The world was its anchor, its source, and it had to be severed. Watson moved to the edge of the square, rallying the guards and townsfolk. His voice was steady as he directed them to arm themselves and create a perimeter. The infection was spreading, but it could be contained. Holmes advanced on the creature, his movements precise and focused. The air around it shimmered with heat, the ichor pulsing as though alive. Holmes struck with surgical precision, his blade slicing through the tendrils that reached for him. The creature roared, its voice a distorted echo that shook the ground. Holmes pressed forward, his mind calculating every step, every strike. The echo recoiled, its movements becoming erratic as the bonds tethering it to the well began to weaken. Watson joined him, his rifle firing with practiced efficiency. Together, they forced the creature back, their combined efforts driving it to the well. Holmes shouted a single command, and Watson understood. With a final and decisive blow, Holmes severed the creature's connection to the well. The ichor writhed and screamed, its form collapsing into itself as it was drawn back into the depths. The well shuddered, its stones cracking and crumbling as the infection's hold was broken. By dawn, Kingsbridge was silent once more. The square was littered with debris, the faint smell of ash lingering in the air. The well was gone, its ruins sealed with rubble and earth. The infection had been contained, but its scars remained. Holmes stood at the edge of the square, his sharp eyes surveying the aftermath. Watson joined him, his face lined with exhaustion. The doctor spoke softly, reflecting on the lives lost and the cost of their survival. Holmes remained silent, his mind turning over the final pieces of the puzzle. Kingsbridge had survived, but it was no victory. The infection's source, the stranger who had brought it here, was still out there, and its purpose remained unclear. As the townsfolk began to rebuild, Holmes and Watson prepared to leave. Kingsbridge was no longer their concern. Their infection was part of a larger game, one they intended to uncover. With the ruins of Kingsbridge, they set out into the desolation once more. The road ahead was uncertain, but for Holmes, uncertainty was the greatest puzzle of all. And so ends this series set of Sherlock Holmes and the Shadows of the Dead. I hope you loved it. And thank you so much for listening. And if you like what I do and want to support me, you can visit my Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/SFGT. Where you get a lot of cool bonuses as a result of supporting this podcast. And now, I want to thank the amazing legend, really they are legends, that support me directly. First up is the amazingly generous, my brilliant pal, Matto Star, my illustrious Ode 90 Titan. Your support shines brighter than a lantern in a zombie-infested fog. And let's face it, that's the kind of light we desperately need around here. You're the Watson to my homes, the gas lamp to my cobblestone streets, and the reason the tea stays hot even in the midst of Victorian apocalyptic chaos. Dudio, without your unwavering generosity, unparalleled, jaw-dropping support, who knows how many mysteries would go unsolved, or how many undead would roam unchecked? Probably all of them. Thank you, my friend Matto, for being the true titan that you are. Bubbling and a-brewing full of strength, warmth, and brilliance, helping me dedicate that kind of attitude and spirit into everything that I do. Raise a cup of tea, or a rifle if you prefer, should a zombie head your way, to yourself, mate. Because you're amazing. Thanks for being my pal, supporting me, and have a kick-ass week ahead. and I can't wait to sit down and respond to your lovely email, mate. Rest assured, it's on its way, legend. Thanks again, Matto Star. You're amazing. And I want to thank the brilliant White Tea Warlords that support me. I'm lucky enough to have the mighty Lesosaurus Rex, my powerhouse of a White Tea Warlord. If there's one person who could dominate both the Victorian Fog and the Undead Hordes, it's you. Rumour has it you've been spotted in the finest Victorian era gym, pumping iron next to mustachio gentlemen in waistcoats. Imagine it, the sound of your weights echoing through the cobblestone streets as the town collectively agrees, yes, that's the sound of strength saving us all. One bench press at a time. When the zombies come, they don't stand a chance against T-Rex in the gym. I'm certain your burpees alone could send them fleeing into the mist, groaning for mercy. Thank you for being the iron-wielding, fog-clearing force that you are, man. And cheers for being my pal. Have a kick-ass week, and thanks for your support, mate. And my next White Tea Warlord, Joseph Schroeder. Joseph, the White Tea Warlord most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse, or better yet, solve it entirely. They probably handed you that award with a golden shovel in one hand and a spiked cricket bat in the other, knowing you'd be the first to figure out why the undead are shambling about in the first place. I can picture you now, man. Holding court in the town square, piecing together the zombie outbreak with the precision of Holmes himself, your logical mind would have the townsfolk organized, rationing tea, barricading the gates, and forming zombie distraction squads. You'd thrive, Joseph, and not just survive. Thank you for bringing your intellect, determination, and knack for solving chaos to this podcast. You'd be the hero that we'd trust to lead us through the fog. Thanks, man, for being my pal and supporting me in the way you do. Have a wonderful week, mate. And Marvelous Maya, my next White Tea Warlord, commanding an unstoppable army of cats. An image so delightfully brilliant, it feels like a story in itself. As the fog rolls in and the zombies creep closer, your feline forces would emerge from every shadow, their sleek bodies darting through the mist. With a flick of your wrist, your loyal brigade would launch an attack so swift and stealthy, the undead wouldn't know what hit them. You, Maya, are the fearless leader, issuing commands from the highest rooftops. Your cats weaving intricate strategies that would make even Holmes himself envious. Who else could save the day with a battalion of fluffy brilliance and razor-sharp claws? Only you. Thank you, mate, for supporting me in the way you do, Maya, and being my pal. Have a brilliant week ahead, mate. And I'm also lucky to have my fourth White Tea Warlord, Sangeetha Sagar, the Dreamwalker, who ventures where others fear to tread. You are the seeker of answers, the one who dares to uncover the truth hidden in the shadows. While the rest of us are busy bolting the doors, you're stepping into the void, wandering through haunted dreams to find the source of the evil that plagues the land. In my mind, you're the kind of hero whose calm courage cuts through even the darkest nightmares. While others quake in fear, you stride directly into the depths of the zombie apocalypse with a lantern in one hand and wisdom in the other. Sangeetha, I've actually already written up your story, and I'm about to send it your way. I hope you love it, and I'm always open for feedback. But you'll get it first. Thank you so much, Sangeetha. Have a wonderful week, and thank you so much for your support and being my pal. A big thank you to all my White Tea Warlords. And now I want to thank my amazing, brilliant, top-notch Earl Grey Enforcers. I am lucky to have Jessica Garcia, Michael Krupp, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Peter Raffaelli, and Chad Warren. Thank all of you legends for supporting me in the way that you do. I am absolutely blessed to have your support. Now, if you want these episodes early by a week, have impeccably high quality audio at 320 kilobytes per second, have a look at my Patreon, where you can support me at any tier to get that kind of content. And if you're a White Tea Warlord and above, you get to make direct story requests crafted in a manner that you see fit. So, if you want a custom story made, that could be a great opportunity. And you can find all this info at www.patreon.com/SFGT. Now, have a fantastic week ahead of yourselves. And I'll catch you next week, you amazing, amazing listeners and friends. Have a fantastic week ahead. And as always, till next we meet.
Night whispers secrets untold, ghostly tales centuries old. In the shadows, mysteries unfold. Listeners gather brave and bold. Stories, fables, ghostly tales. In every shadow, a truth unveils. As the night around us prevails, every whispered secret sails. Fire, eyes wide with fear. Tales of the unseen draw near. Blurring lines between what's clear, between the real and what appears.
Listening legends, thank you to my patron supporters, and a huge shout out to Matto Star, Lesosaurus, Joseph, Maya, and Sangeetha. Have a great week. Thank you.